The Lord is God, chapter 86. With an angry and at the same time a discouraged countenance, Ahab, the king of Israel, looks outside his palace. The view is not very comforting. All the fields are bare and empty, and the pastures are scorched. Not a speck of green can be seen. He clenches his fists in helpless rage. He is angry with the God of Israel and also angry with Elijah. Oh, if he only knew where Elijah was, then, where could this man be? He had sought for him everywhere. He had sent his servants throughout all the land, but it had been in vain. One servant after the other had returned with the message that they could not find Elijah. Yes, Ahab even had sought in the countries which lay around him, but in vain. Elijah is gone, and Elijah remains away. The word of the prophet has come to pass. From the moment that Elijah had brought this message until this very day, it did not rain one drop. Even the dew has stayed away. 3 years and 6 months have already gone by. The fields are no longer plowed. The seed is not planted. There is no harvest. Why should the farmers work in their fields? It would be to no profit anyway. Nothing can grow during this dreadful drought. Queen Jezebel also walks with a surly face. She feels and sees and that the God of Israel is mightier than her idol Baal. But she does not want to see it. She will not admit it. No, never. The hatred against God, whom she does not know, increases within her heart. There were schools in the land of Canaan in which the young Israelites were instructed in the worship of the Lord. They were called the schools of the prophets. They were there in the days of Samuel. The young prophets who lived in these schools had to teach the people. We still have a few of these schools to this day. But Jezebel wanted the Lord, the God of Israel, to be forgotten. Not the Lord, but Baal must be worshipped and honored. When the dreadful drought came, whereby Israel's God showed he was stronger and mightier than all the idols, Jezebel, with powerless enmity, and gave the command for all the young prophets to be slain. Thus, they could no longer teach the people. Many young men who would not bend their knees before Baal were killed, horribly murdered. But happily, not everyone. 100 prophets were hidden by an Israelite, so that Jezebel could not find them. This courageous Israelite's name was Obadiah. He was governor in the palace of Ahab. He took care of the food for Ahab and all his courtiers. Obadiah was a man who feared the Lord from his youth. He never bent his knees before Baal, the idol of Jezebel. He only bent his knees and prayed to God. Still, this God-fearing Obadiah must associate daily with the ungodly king and the heathen queen. O children, you also live in a world full of wickedness. Later, you too will have to work with mockers and cursers. What will you do? Do not curse with them, and do not mock with them. You should warn those with whom you must associate. when Jezebel would destroy all the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah saved 100 prophets from death and hid them. Even more, he took care that they also received food. He gave them bread and water, so they did not die from hunger. This was very dangerous, because if Jezebel heard this, she would be furious and would immediately slay him. Still, he did it. Courageous Obadiah! Would you risk doing this, or wouldn't you? One day, two horsemen ride out of the city of Jezreel. They are Ahab the king and Obadiah his governor. You know that Omri, the father of Ahab, had built a royal palace in Samaria. But Ahab also built a palace in Jezreel. This village lay far to the north. In the winter, Ahab lived in Samaria, but in the summer, when it was very hot, he lived in Jezreel. Thus, Ahab has two palaces. During this terrible drought, he is living in Jezreel. Now he and Obadiah leave the royal palace at Jezreel. Silently they ride along the scorched fields, and they are looking for a little grass for their horses and mules. Suddenly Ahab says, "Obadiah, we must not stay together. Let us each ride in a different direction. Let us each take a different road." Soon they come to a fork in the road, and Ahab rides one way, and Obadiah goes the other. Obadiah quietly rides along, looking to the left and to the right, to see if he can possibly find a small green spot where some grass is growing. Suddenly, he sees a man standing in the center of the road. When Obadiah comes close to this man, he recognizes him. He jumps from his horse and falls with his face on the ground. This was the custom in Canaan whenever a person met anyone for whom he had great respect. In surprise, he asks, "Art thou that my lord Elijah?" "Yes," is the answer, "I am Elijah." "How is it possible? Wasn't Elijah with the widow at Zarephath?" "Yes, he was there for many months, but the Lord told him to go to Ahab." Immediately the prophet obeyed and journeyed toward Jezreel. When he had almost reached this village, he meets Obadiah. "Go to Ahab," Elijah commands him, "and tell the king that I must speak to him." However, Obadiah dare not do this. He is afraid that Elijah will go somewhere else in the meantime. "Oh, sir," he objects, "if I return here with the king and he cannot find you, he will kill me. The king has sought you everywhere, but he could not find you. Didn't you hear that I have 100 prophets hidden so that Jezebel cannot find them? Why do you want me to be slain? If Ahab cannot find you, he will slay me. His fury will have no bounds. He shall think that I want to deceive him." Elijah smiles. "Do not be afraid, Obadiah," Elijah says, putting him at ease. "I will not run away. I will wait here until you return." Obadiah quickly rides back, looking for the king. Elijah remains alone and waits. A little later, Ahab and Obadiah ride hastily toward Elijah. Obadiah found Ahab and told him that the prophet wanted to speak to him. Immediately the king came with Obadiah. When Ahab sees Elijah in the distance, he becomes angry. With fire in his eyes, he rides toward the prophet and snaps these words at him, "Art thou he that troubleth Israel?" Do you hear that? Ahab puts the blame of this drought upon Elijah, because he means it is your fault that it doesn't rain. You are making our people wretched. Ahab trembles with anger. But Elijah is not afraid. Indeed not. "Oh no, king," he answers without fear. "I am not making Israel wretched, but you are the guilty one. You have forsaken the Lord. For that reason this drought has come." Courageous Elijah! How daring of him! Ahab is silent. He doesn't know what to say, for he knows that Elijah is speaking the truth. There is a voice deep in his heart which agrees with Elijah. "Listen," continues Elijah, "you must gather all Israel together upon Mount Carmel. Also, all the prophets of Baal must come." This Mount Carmel lies close to Jezreel, near the Mediterranean Sea. Ahab goes. He shall obey Elijah's command. You see, he must do it because of the drought. The sooner it rains, the better. The drought has lasted far too long to the liking of Ahab. A few days later, there are thousands of Israelites gathered upon Mount Carmel. Ahab had sent messengers throughout all the land, and the Israelites have come. No one works, for he cannot. A man walks to the fore and begins to speak. He is Elijah. Let us listen to what he says. "You want to worship two gods," he says reproachfully. "You want to worship the Lord and Baal at the same time. However, that cannot be done. One of the two is God. If the Lord is God, you must worship him. But if Baal is God, serve Baal." He is silent, and the people are silent. They do not know what to answer him. Many put down their heads in shame. "I will make a proposal to you," Elijah continues. "I will build an altar, and the priests of Baal must build an altar. We both will lay wood and an offering upon the altar, but we will not put fire to the wood. I will call to God. The priests of Baal must pray to their God, and the God who answers with fire, he is God. That God you shall henceforth worship. Is that agreeable?" "Yes, yes, it is," the people cry unanimously. You must know that the priests of Baal told everywhere that Baal brings the thunder and the lightning. If that is true, it would be a very small matter for Baal to answer with fire. "You must be first to try it," Elijah says to the 450 priests of Baal, "because you are so many and I am all alone." They agree to this. The priests of Baal prepare their offering, but they do not light it. When everything is ready, they cry, "Baal, hear us!" Nothing happens. They get no answer. Again they cry, "Baal, hear us!" Again, no answer. They are busy for hours, They cut themselves with knives so the blood drips upon the ground. They hope Baal shall have pity upon them. Elijah sees their wearisome toiling. At last he begins to mock with them. "Cry a little louder," he says. "Perhaps Baal is sleeping, or he may be busy with something, so he doesn't hear your cry. It also could be that he is on a journey." Foolishly, the priests do so, crying and yelling and jumping against the altar. "O Baal, Baal, hear us," they plead. But Baal does not answer. Of course not, for Baal is no god. Baal is nothing but a dead stone image. Baal cannot answer. Finally, it is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. "You have tried long enough," Elijah says while he walks forward. "Now it is my turn." He doesn't use the same altar which the priests of Baal had used. Oh no, he builds a new altar. He takes 12 stones, because there are 12 tribes in Israel. Even if Israel is divided into 2 parts, it is one people, one nation, children of the same house. He builds an altar with these 12 stones. He kills the animals and prepares the offering. He also has made a trench around the altar. He then commands, "Fill 4 barrels with water." They obey him. He empties these barrels of water over the altar. "Do it again," he commands. Again, they are emptied. "Do it the 3rd time," he orders. A total of 12 barrels of water are poured over the altar and the offering. Everything is dripping with water. Even the trench in which has been dug around the altar is full of water. Elijah does this purposely, so they cannot accuse him of deceit. When everything is ready, he lifts his hands toward heaven. It is breathlessly quiet. Every person is in the greatest suspense. How shall this end? Listen, Elijah prays. "Lord," he pleads, "hear me and show the people that thou art the Lord, the God of Israel." Elijah does not cut himself with a knife. Elijah does not cry and yell. Neither does he jump. It is not necessary, because the God of Elijah is the living God. And then, suddenly, fire descends from heaven with a great flash of light. In the twinkling of an eye, the wood and the offering are burned. Yes, even the water in the trench is all dried up. It is so hot. People are deeply impressed. For a moment it is silent. Then the people exclaim, "The Lord, He is the God! The Lord, He is the God!" Behold, Elijah's face beams with gladness, not because he is honored, but because God receives the honor. "If the Lord is God, then catch the priests of Baal," he commands. "Let none of them escape." The people obey immediately. Elijah kills them all. This is not murdering, because the priests of the idols may not remain alive in Israel. God had strictly forbidden this in his laws. A man is sitting on the heights of Carmel. His head is bowed low, so low it is between his knees. The man is Elijah, the prophet. He is praying. After the glorious victory of the God of Israel, who had answered by fire, Elijah had told Ahab to eat quickly and immediately ride to Jezreel, because it was going to rain abundantly. Elijah climbs higher on the mountain to pray. He asks the Lord if he will give rain. His servant is with him. "Go look toward the sea, he tells his servant. "Look at the sky." Short time later, the servant returns with the information that he sees nothing. Again, Elijah prays, and after he prays, he sends his servant to look again. These actions were repeated 7 times. Finally, after the 7th time, the youth calls out, "I see a little cloud about the size of a man's hand." Elijah hastily arises, hurries toward Ahab, and says, "King, make haste, there shall be an abundance of rain." Ahab rides away, and Elijah runs before the chariot. Elijah does this to honor the king. Elijah is no rebel. No, he honors the king before the eyes of the people. He does reprove the sins of Ahab, but he acknowledges Ahab as his sovereign and Lord. We also must honor those who are placed over us. In the meantime, the skies become black with heavy clouds. It begins to rain abundantly. In the Bible it says, there was a great rain. Oh, how glad the Israelites were. At last, after 3 years and 6 months of drought, the rain gushed down in streams. God is good, children. Yes, he is, and so he will remain. But God is also righteous. He must punish sin. He punished Israel, and he will also punish our nation if we continue to live in sin.